Okay, so starting the presentation about Hermes, that's our project related to using HF as backhaul for communities in very isolated places like Amazon forest or Central Africa, things like this. So first, why the HF band? Because the ionosphere that ranges more or less between 50 to 250 kilometers of height, it can bounces the signals that you transmit in this band during the time you want. The more important layers that reflects the signal is this F1 and F2. During the day there exist two layers, then they merge together at night. In the equator, close to the equator line, there is another stratification that the F2 stratificates to F2 and F3. Depending on the literature, people say 2.1 or F3. What determines how good your signal will bounce in the ionosphere is the density of the plasma, the density of the electrons in the plasma that are there. And this is related to the sun, how much the sun beams the radiation to this layer. And there is also the 11-year sunspot cycle. The sunspots increase and decreases with the in an 11-year cycle. And right now we are in the bottom valley of the 25th sunspot cycle since the humanity started measuring it. And then the propagation is the worst possible now, which is good because anything we develop now will work in the next years much better. But by current ITU definition, HF goes from 3 to 30 megahertz. And so this is a more easy to understand drawing. If you want to reach a much faraway place, you can use a sky wave instead of ground wave, line of sight. That's usually what we use in higher frequencies. In very low frequencies, you use ground wave. Then the Earth works as a wave guide to the signal. But in HF, no. In HF, we use this type of transmission propagation that's called sky wave. Brief history. Well, sky wave transmissions in HF were the most important means of communication for places where there were no cables to connect. For example, the imperialist powers to talk to Africa, they use always HF, and there are a lot of telephony services running on HF in the 30s, 40s, and so on. Till today, HF is widely used in Amazon forest in Brazil and in Congo, South Sudan, Central African Republic. It's the only, in the end, communication means. Satellite's expensive for most of the people. The advantage of using satellite is that in HF you can put how much power you want, and people will be able to receive a small, shitty HF receiver with a small telescopic antenna. And satellite, usually you have power constraints in the transponder to send the signal back. And also the latency of satellite is much greater than HF. You're bouncing 100 kilometers only, and the satellites are thousands of kilometers high. The clear disadvantage of it is that you lower frequency, so you have less bandwidth, you have bigger antennas. This is a place I worked with some HF installation in Acre. That's this state of Brazil in Amazon. The characteristics of this Amazon is all here, no? The top of this map that shows part of South America. The more light color is Brazil. There is no roads, there are no trains, nothing. The transportation is by rivers. No electricity also in the rural areas. It's kind of tough place, and they really need communication for emergency, for any kind of communication. They miss it, because if they get sick and the river is low, they just die. They cannot even call someone. And yeah. So the other project, Rizomatica now, is planning to work, is in Pará. That's the top state of Brazil. In close to Xingu River. Thanks, Kit. Yeah, more or less, more or less in this region that it's called Terra do Meio. That's like the size of Holland and Belgium together, a bit bigger. And the distance from the municipality where you have internet and every other possible connectivity to the communities we work is 500 kilometers. It used to be the biggest municipality in the world, and they splitted it a bit, so now it's in China, but it's the second. And so the links usually is from the forest to the near cities. That's 500 kilometers far. This is a typical house. There is the oven. People hunt, so everybody shoots very well. This is a typical installation that we did. This is in 2016. It's a common Icon IC78 radio that's used for hams. And this is a commercial version that's unlocked. You can transmit in any frequency you want in the HF band. One simple battery connected to a solar panel. Yeah, no big deal here. In Rizomatica, in past year, we came up with this idea of applying to this challenge that Mozilla launched in the beginning of the year, that's called WINS, Wireless Innovation of a Network Society. And there were two challenges. One was for post-disaster situations, and then we proposed this project for this situation, like a disaster or catastrophe, something like this, how to recover and have a communication system when the communication infrastructure is struck, is destroyed. So the idea is to have, this is a remote location when, for example, an isolated community, or let's say a place where the disaster happened. So the idea is to put here the HF radio, BTS, a Wi-Fi access point, stuff like that. And then you connect to the nearest hop where you have connectivity that we call here Hermes Central, that you connect the HF radio to the network and so on. If anyone wants to stop to ask something, feel free. The equipment we used in this trial in Mexico, in Oaxaca, was this Icon IC7100. The radio indeed is this bottom part together with the part on top. In the middle is just a watt meter that also measures the reflected standing wave. And it is also an impedance matcher, so if the antenna is not good, you just match it there. Power supply, small wireless access point, a PC, and a BTS that you all know very well. This is in one community when we were installing the HF system. Of course, we don't take masts in the middle of the forest, so people chop a tree and make the mast with wood. That's the antenna, one simple. That specifically is not exactly a standard dipole. It's a Carolina Widow antenna that has one half of the antenna bigger than the other. So it gives you a little wider bandwidth. And there is a balloon in the middle to match the impedance. And this antenna we were using for 80 meter band, like around 3.5 megahertz. In the Hermes project, we decided, in the first projects I participated, we were using DRM, Digital Radio Mondial. That's a standard for broadcasting. It's not really very good for it. So we decided to change to AirDop. That's a modem developed by ham radio people. Can give you up to 2 kilobit per second. Can use with any HF radio. In this trial in Mexico, we use 6 megahertz, 6030, something like this. The type of transmission in the HF is NVIS, near vertical incident sky wave. This means the antenna is close to the ground. The signal goes all upwards. So you have no black zone. You have a continuous coverage of 600 kilometers, depends on how high you put the antenna. In this trial in Mexico, we used a standard quarter wavelength dipole antenna. No, just cut the wires and connect to the radio. No big deal. I wrote this HISO-HF connector that I talked to the TNC. These are AirDop TNC, and expose an interface to the RCCN that Keith will talk about. But it's just a iNotify based with spool directors, input and output directories that you drop a file there, it transmits the file. When a file arrives, it writes there. And the services key to talk more about, but we enabled SMS and voice messages. The voice messages we encoded with codec 2 in 1.3 kilobit per second. That was the lowest bit rate that codec 2 provides a understandable audio. Less than this is kind of very bad. It's shit. This is what works more or less well. And some characteristics of the modem, like it has you can choose different bandwidths, force different bandwidths. Otherwise, it chooses adaptively depending on the propagation characteristics. You have two modes. One arc, that's automatic request. It's a connected mode. So if the other end doesn't receive a package or a frame, it asks the other end, oh, send me again. And there is a broadcast mode that's called FEC, that you just set the how robust you want the signal, the FEC level, the decoding rate, and also how many retransmit times you want, just like any data carousel protocol in any broadcasting system. So we just want to retransmit 5-10 times, and you broadcast it. The modulations are this one, 4FS key, 4PS key, 8PS key, 128 carriers, 25 to 167 baud. That gives us 28 up to 2.296 kilobit per second. The modem chooses what works. No, if the frame starts to be received in the other end with error, it goes increasing the robustness and decreasing the bitrate. And this works pretty well. Just the same time you started doing trials, these AirDop developers released an experimental FDM mode. Of course, we didn't use it because it was just released, and this previous mode like was working fine. But with OFDM, you can get more or less twice the bit rate. So you can get more or less 2 bit per second per hertz of bit rate density per hertz, which is good. Things are getting better. People are really evolving. Well, the AirDop communicates with the radio using standard AUSA to send the signal in and out, and to key and unkey the radio, serial port, TTY USB 0. This radio we bought, it has a USB cable that exposes 2 serial ports and the AUSA in-out device. One serial port is basically for keying and unkeying the radio, basic stuff. And the other serial port, you can control all the parameters of the radio, power, frequency, and everything. That we didn't use the second serial, or just tuning the radio and the frequency we were using, and that's it. This is an example of the command line, like you put a TCP port, that TCP and TCP plus one ports that used to connect to the TNC, and the other port for the payload. And you put the commands to send to the serial to key the radio, to unkey the radio. And these are the AUSA device names that I set it up, AUSA RC here, because it uses 12 12,000 hertz sample rate, the modem. So some sound cards, and specifically the radio sound card was 48, and also was doing some shit. And then I created this to do conversion in software, and it worked pretty well. Just for the sake of completeness, some commands of the TNC, like there is the ARC call that's to a connected connection, the buffer that the modem says to you how much data is inside the TNC still to be transmitted. Initialize, listen, you said listen on, listen off, to say if you want to receive connections or not, like protocol mode, that's the ARC or the FEC. And this is what you send to the TNC, this is what the TNC sends to us, like buffer to say how much is still in internal memory of the TNC not sent, connected, disconnected, when you manage to connect. PTT, when the TNC keys the radio and keys the radio, like not much complex. I just wrote a software to use this. And well, what really the user in this that's using the service sees, no? So, Kit, do you want to talk a bit about?
Yeah, quickly. So this is our seriously, you know, complex protocol that we invented to pass messages from one system, Hermes Central, to Hermes Remote, which was done as Rafael just explained, by dropping a file into a folder on one system, which the HF connector just picks up and says, okay, I need to transmit this. And so it's like some kind of rsync or something that just takes a long time. Whatever file you drop into a folder on one system will eventually appear on the other system. So we decided to encode SMS by calling the file name message with the SMPP sequence number, and the file contents of the SMS was simply the first line, the source number, the second line, the destination number, and then the message text after that, and our call is a call with the UUID generated by the PBX, and again, just the source and destination phone numbers in the file name, and the payload is the codec 2 payload. So it's no big deal. We just keep things really, really simple. So there's no need to put any other information in a non-text file. We just encoded the metadata in the file name.
But how does the actual transfer of the file work? I mean, you say, okay, you put together some file with a name or whatever, but how do you transfer the actual file over there?
I notify interface when the connector sees the files there. I read the file, write in a ring buffer, the other thread reads it and write to the TNC slowly, because the TNC just overflows if you write too much data. And the TNC does the sender station, the receive station, it does in this case automatically. So if both stations are trying to send, it first ends, let's say, one station finished to send the data, then the holes of the station change for transmitting station to receive station automatically, and the other station, if there's some data to send, for example, the file, it sends. The modem is like a dumb pipe, the TNC.
Yes,
everything
yes,
you write.
So what I'm interested in is exactly the protocol that you're using to convert files into that dump pipe and the other way around, because to me it sounds a lot like UCC.
Yeah, it's like what I do indeed, I write in the beginning of the file the size of the file name, and then the size of the payload. No, I just write the size of the payload, and then I have the file name and the payload just after, and then pump this like through the, no, I have two sizes, the file name and the payload, and then just write this. The modem takes care that everything arrives perfect or it doesn't, like it's like a connected mode, so yeah, it's a dumb pipe. You write whatever you want. But and I did in a way that you just write to the ring buffer whatever you want, and the modem you transmit, it doesn't matter if it's a file, can be a stream or anything, like, yeah.
So you said kind of quick rundown in case it wasn't clear what kind of, what happens on the SMSs, or rather more simple, but in terms of this asynchronous phone call idea, was that you have a user in the remote community connected to the GSM network and they want to call somebody. So they call the normal PSTN number and the PBX in the local community picks up and plays back a message to them which says, please record your message for the destination. They record the message and then they hang up. Meanwhile, we've recorded this message to disk, we encode it with the codec 2, and we drop it into the RISO HF connector spool, which then transfers it to the other side over the HF link. Eventually it gets there. The other side, through the iNotify mechanism, sees the file, looks at it, figures out, okay, this is from this number to this other number. It calls that number on the PSTN and plays back to the callee when they pick up and things saying, good afternoon, or whatever. You have a new message from a user on the Hermes emergency network. Please stand by and listen to the message. And then we play back the message to them, and then we drop them into an IVR that says, if you're happy, you receive the message, press 1. If you would like to hear it again, press 2. If you would like to reply, press 3. If they press 3, we record their message, we drop it into the spool, we encode it with codec 2, and we send it back to the other person, and basically rinse and repeat until the communication is complete.
So do you have a max time of recording, let's say, like 30 seconds or something like that?
I mean that would be really easy to implement. I didn't implement it in the test case. I don't know. I mean, we were sort of looking at that with codec 2 at the bit weight we were using, it should have been more or less real time to transfer the files, but it didn't really end up like that. It was about 2 by or something. So I guess the idea is that people should be informed about using the network, that they would say, try to keep your messages short, because the longer you make your message, the more difficult it is to get it through.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually a good idea, because every time more I have friends just actually, instead of just messaging me, they actually use like messaging applications to actually record voice over 2 minutes, and then I have to listen for it. So actually it looks like quite a real case scenario. So yeah, congrats on that.
I think we limited this, the sizing 15 seconds.
Sure. I mean, it's
The idea of recording and then sending and whatever. I mean, I see that actually people use it, so yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, the same token with SMS. When somebody sends an SMS, it just drops it into the spool file, gets transferred over, and gets transferred to the other system, and vice versa.
What is the usual delay for say 10-second message? I mean, how long does it take for it to be transmitted in the real world and arrive at the receiver?
I think it was about 2 by in our real-world test, no? Was it like for a 10-second file, 20 seconds on the HF? Maybe 2.5, something like that. Less than 3 times, no?
In the real-world testing, one station in the mountains, one in Oaxaca, was like 2 times the size of the message. But we were using an old version of AirDrop that the bitrate is much lower than current version. So I think the same size of the messaging time will be the time to transmit it, more or less.
Yeah, I wanted to demo it, but I don't actually have radios with USB or serial PTT, and so I was thinking of just using the sound card, which is why you might have heard AirDrop screaming in the back there a little while ago, but I decided to abandon the idea of doing a demo in the time span we had. But yeah, it's easy to play with it yourself.
So how does system understand that this file was already transmitted and this one is new and this one is old?
It's iNotify. Like, I just read the file and write in the ring buffer. If there is another one, I get and write in the ring buffer. And in the other end, the connector just keeps reading from the air, writes to a ring buffer, then there is an adapter that keeps reading for the ring buffer, and in case a file adapter, that there is the syntax of file name and payload, then I get the file name, create the file and the payload, I write to the file. Like.
So how does it survive the restart, or do you remove the file after it's transmitted? Or
after it's transmitted, I remove the file, exactly. Just this. But it's not complete yet. There are some corner cases, certainly, that it's a prototype. Like, if we put in production, some things need to be more care to.
So I'm not sure if you not using UUCP for that kind of transfer, because that's exactly what it's designed for. The problem with existing UUCP protocols is that they do basically segmentation and retransmission and all that stuff which the TNC is doing. But I think what should be rather easy is to... So UCP is specified both over analog links where you do X modem or Z modem, whatever, with all the retransmissions. But if you, there's also a transparent mode which is used if you use UCP over TCP normally. The advantage of using UCP would be that you have all this infrastructure around, so you basically can execute remote commands. So you don't really have to say, oh, this is a, you know, whatever, a file for voice or something like that, but basically the sender basically says, well, execute this shell command on the remote node after the file has been received, and it gets executed, and you have also the notion of, you know, batches and compression and so on and so on. So might be an idea, if you haven't looked into it, to look into some synergy there, because yeah, UCP has been out since, I don't know, 30, 40 years. And
yeah, another option was to use sound modem, the good old side sound modem from Tom Sawyer and UCP. But in the end, I realized that the modem itself, not UCP, was kind of buggy, and I think got bit rot since 94. So we went to something new that doesn't yet talk to UCP. But I think if you go to production with this, that's the idea. Yeah. I think... certainly, we need to evolve it a bit. Like, I mean, I need to see what would be the advantage of putting UCP on top. And
yeah, I mean, I think for sure that we should look at what 40 or more years of protocol development has got for us, and some of the things that this is sort of a precursor to ideas of how to do some kind of interactive communication over HF link, where you obviously can't run TCP or anything like that. So, I mean, my idea with a little bit of this is to try to figure out some sort of IRC gateway or something like that, where you might, obviously, maybe you don't want to be sending all messages from a busy channel, but you could have some kind of, you could send mentions, or you could just have a connection to an IRC channel with a rate limit on it, so you would stop forwarding in the case you got too much, and that would allow people in an emergency situation to be connected to a lot of other people without having to implement that multi-person infrastructure yourself. You could be remotely connected to an IRC channel that's coordinating from far away. You're just going to have quite a lot of latency on your conversations.
Yeah, but this is very important. We are developing the service too, because you just cannot run normal internet on this kind of technology. So we need also to provide the services, or at least ask the community what they want. And this idea of IRC is good. Like, yeah.
More slides.
Yeah. So some links, and we expired the time already a bit. I have some slides of that I want to show if you think it's okay, like some HF broadcasting facilities in Brazil that the government owns, and well, HF broadcasts are being shut down all around the world, and what I discovered just testing is that these incredible huge HF antennas can be used for two-way communication, and so I'm trying, so I pass more or less fast. We did a test using a HRS-440, that's a curtain array antenna, four dipoles, with reflector of 16 dB of gain, running DRM, that what we wanted to run to have a bit higher bit rate. You can see the signal here, the preamplifier, the watt meter, and yeah, in that frequency. So our simple setup, like a lot of things, the fan to not to burn everything, power supply, a DRM radio. This is the building. In the back, you can see one antenna. There are 18. This is the transmission line, unbalanced, open transmission lines. I think 300 ohms. Transmission line, in the back one antenna. This is looking to the below the antenna. You can see the dipoles, the the reflectors. Yeah. It's me in front of the antenna. It's not small antenna. This is one of the antennas. Yeah. Well, but where we wanna go with this in the end, like we would like us to have, RDoP doesn't have it a proper routing system that if Third World War comes and if North Korea shoots all the satellites, we'd like to have a proper network that we can connect anyone in the world using HF. Right now the radios only can transmit or receive, so full duplex would be nice. Like wider bandwidth, like the radios are limited because they are made for voice, so you have other radios have more or less a low pass filter around 3 kilohertz. So this is what limits our bandwidth. Well, military radio can do a lot of more in HF. Like I saw a demonstration of military radio from Brasilia to Manaus, like 2,500 kilometers. They managed a stable connection of 96 kilobit per second, which is pretty fair. These are all open standards by NATO. This standard is the 2GHF. Though I could not find much free software that implements these NATO standards, but I don't know if it's really worth because they're fairly complex. I don't think we need all that complexity. It's just like you do in SysMocon, OSMocon to implement all the 3GPP stack. I think it's too much to implement the NATO standards, maybe something simpler, but still with the functionality that can be useful. And the thing we want to do sooner than later is just have a phone call, GSM phone call over HF. Like, but as you cannot have bidirectional communication, like some use of Vox activity detection, I don't know, discontinuous transmission from GSM as a hint, maybe to have you, for a person in a community to have a live phone call, and well, maybe implement some way the PTT or just use voice activity for a person to really dial to someone and complete the call using HF as backhaul using these radios you could see.
But now you're talking about the digitally encoded voice, or are you talking about using the analog HF channel to backhaul the voice?
It could be anyone, it could be analog or digital. In the end, I'm thinking in digital because the quality will be better. Oh, sometimes not, but but yeah, usually digital, but could be analog, doesn't matter, could be SSB. Just the signaling need to be digital, yeah. But this is what I think next step, it would be fun to have.
So, yeah. So, do you have an idea of which kind of latency do you get in the setup
you have on your towns, let's say, or from one side to the other, approximate?
You can just make the math. It's very fast in the end. It's almost line of sight. Just the signal goes up a bit.
Yeah, but that's why. So, it's going up.
The problem is the Doppler, because sometimes the F1 layer reflects a bit of your signal. The F2 layer reflects a bit. So you have multipath. You have a lot of problems like this, but with digital modulation in these days, you can cope with OFDM systems. You can easily take these problems out. The latency, I cannot tell you exactly. We didn't measure and didn't care in the end.
Yeah, I was just wondering if it's similar to satellite or...
No.
Okay.
It's more like a landline. It's slightly long. So if you think you're talking about it's 500 kilometers distance, but you need to go in addition, you can go up to 100 kilometers and down. So, but it's still very little, right?
Yeah, you can have Doppler of till 5 milliseconds because of the signal bus in different heights, but the latency is lower.
Yeah,
it's much lower than satellite.
Do you want to say something about the problems of the full duplex radios and the duty cycle of...
Yeah, the problems we had is the radios got extremely hot because they are not really made for full duty cycle transmissions. So we had to decrease a bit the power. They are made for voice, and voice SSB is carrier suppressed. So between each phoneme, there is zero power being transmitted, and in any digital system, any node, let's say, but this OFDM or single carrier digital system, you always have like full power, and these transceivers are not really made for it. So also the battery system that is designed for voice cannot do digital because they run out very fast. The radio sucks much more electricity. Like small problems that you only know when you do it, like, and stuff like that. And the problem of doing full duplex, I heard people like asking people, oh, what if I make a radio transmitting with a frequency shift uplink, downlink, just like GSM? Is that you cannot have a practical cavity filter on the on this size? So you need to have other ways of separation. And people said, oh, just put the antenna 100 meters far from the other, and then you have your separation. But to have a full duplex, even these military radios, like, they're not full duplex. They can get very high throughput because they use spread spectrum in the HF and so on, but still they are not full duplex. They are just one way, and it would be good to have two-way. But there are some problems that doesn't seem that easy. But I'm not an expert. So yeah, we are thinking about how to do it.
I'm just wondering, maybe it's a bit of a dumb question. I saw you standing in front of a not small antenna. Do you require that, or is the others, like, do both sides have to be this big, or like what is the relation?
No, the point is that antenna is first that they are there, like, and they want to scrap that thing. I showed previously the simple antennas we use. The point is that with that antenna, with that gain, we can like make a wireless router that can cover the whole Brazil. You have antennas pointed to all directions. The idea in the past was to do jamming, Voice of Russia, Radio Romania, Internacional, from the communists. So you had 600 kilowatt transmitters with antennas pointed to all directions to be able to jam radios from the communist side. But today, the context is not this anymore. So the antenna in the receive side is much more sensible. So one transmitting with a simple antenna will be able to receive much better with this huge antenna, and to transmit, like, you have huge gain, so you can go much far away. So this is why I would like to use this antenna.
So just to recap, like, the setup we saw with the solar panel and the small radio on the desk and this small gray capsule-like antenna, that's enough to transmit back over 500 kilometers?
Easily. Like, this antenna was made to transmit 10,000 kilometers, like, to transmit to Africa, to Asia. The big one, no, this one, no, this one, no. Let me just throw back. This one in the top. That's a simple antenna, like, can be a dipole. With this one, like, you'll be able to do long paths, but you'll be received a very, very attenuated signal in the end. So the idea to use these big antennas is to really be, the problem of that big antenna is that they have very low angle of attack. So they are really made to very long path. So one thing we are considering is changing a bit the radiation pattern. Instead of sending close to the horizontal, send a bit higher in order to cover the country and not to be received in the US better than 100 kilometers. You have really a black zone, like, if you go 200 kilometers far, you cannot receive Radio Nacional da Amazônia, and then after 800, 700 kilometers, you start to receive the radio, because you are in the hop of the signal, you are in the jump, so, yeah.
So you mentioned this particular antenna that we're seeing now, it was made for quite long distance, but it has high attenuation.
Which antenna?
This one?
No, this is a unitary gain, one quarter wave. Well, this exactly is not one quarter, but imagine it's a single dipole. Mm-hmm. It's a single one quarter wavelength dipole, like the theory. It's easy to understand. People usually install as inverted V, because if you install as strictly horizontal dipole, you have nulls in transmission in the antenna. So people usually want to talk with everybody. So they install, instead of like this, they install in inverted V configuration. And then you can have a more or less omnidirectional pattern. So it, you have a contiguous coverage adjacent to the antenna. This is why, and it's simple to do. It's just a wire. Like
you mentioned, the received signal has quite a bit of attenuation if the distance is as the distance grows, right?
Yep.
And what kind of dB values would that be? Do you know?
I don't know, to be honest. Like putting numbers, like you, if you have less than 30 watts.
Mm-hmm.
For voice that you need, I don't know, 6 dB at least of SNR, you'll not be received. Using a quarter wave antenna in an horizontal configuration, like typically all the radios, all the ham radio have 100 watt more or less, but this is for SSB. If you put RFDM, of course, you'll not get out of it 100 watt. But I don't know, but this is easy to find because it was being modeled since the 30s more or less, and the point is that you don't really need to model because there are ionosondes in many parts of the world that keep sending vertical signals in one frequency up and down in different frequencies in the end. So the most important parameter you need to know from the HF is the MUF, the maximal usable frequency. That's the maximal usable frequency that the ionosphere is bouncing. And the attenuation, you can get experimental live data from this ionosonde. So you know the attenuation from the live data you get from these
beacons.
These beacons that are being thrown to the ionosphere. And I don't know the numbers, but you can get live this. And there are prediction software also, but the live reports are better, of course.
Thank you very much.